We'll get to today's ceremony in a second, but look, Leon Draisaitl, 25 points in 8 games against a team that's a pretty good defensive team, and 18 goals, dude. Like, it's ridiculous how dominant he's been against the Predators.
Yeah, it's kind of uncomfortable listening to him try and explain it, because it's like, what's he supposed to say? Like, yeah, I own these guys, and I get it. Like, we got to ask him the question. That's a level of domination that's pretty ridiculous, though. Like, that's otherworldly. Don't really have an explanation for it. Like, Draisaitl, he's just unreal, man. These guys are so unbelievable, and I'm not sure if we get numb to it because we cover them every day and watch every second of every one of their games. But it's what these two are regularly doing. If you look at, like, I haven't gone to pull the numbers yet, but my goodness, like, you know, pull their numbers from when they started facing elimination in the playoffs this last year to now, and what they are, just points per game and production-wise and primary points and, you know, playoffs last year through the start of this year, these guys have been, both of them, completely on another planet. Nobody does this in the league anymore, what these guys are doing. And there's two of them on one team doing it, which is, it's mind-numbing.
Yeah, McDavid has 55 points in his last 26 games, and Leon Draisaitl has 53.
Yeah, that's insane. Like, nobody does that in the league anymore.
Yeah.
So, no. Yeah.
Very few
know,
people
man.
Ever did it, Shocker. That's the other thing. Like, very few people ever did it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, those two, the only other guys to average 2 points a game in the playoffs for more than 15 games were Coffey, Gretzky, and Lemieux. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're spoiled just as fans of the game, getting to watch these guys live in person. And, you know, when you hear Draisaitl again with his comments about it's not individual awards, we've been there, done that, and these guys are so focused on the prize. They are so much in this window right now. Like, to have these two playing together on the same team is just, you have to be able to get yourself to a Stanley Cup final and win one at some point with these two on the same team. It would be a travesty not to. Let's be honest. To not win a Stanley Cup with these two playing on the same team at the same time, right in the heart of their prime, at numbers that, let's be frank, numbers that are incredibly realistic, like just favorable numbers even for the team. But they've built a good team around them, and they're in a window here, so it's fun to watch.
Oh, yeah. No, like the Oilers are definitely a legit Stanley Cup contender for the next few years. I don't know how anybody could argue that whatsoever. To me, the Draisaitl pass on the Evander, and I talked to Evander Kane after the game about it, and, you know, he kind of laughed. He goes, like, and these are Kane's words, not mine. Kane said, the only guy I think in the league who can pass as efficiently on forehand and backhand equally, he thinks, is maybe Crosby. And even then, he's like, he's the closest one. Because Connor McDavid even said, he goes, I can't pass on my backhand like Leon does. I don't do it, right? Like, Leon's like, I can't skate like Connor, right? Like, you know, skill respects other skill.
Yeah.
And, like, as a guy who coaches young players myself, I watch Draisaitl and I'm just like taking videos of that to show, because I'm trying to get kids just to work on their backhand. They don't like it, and I get it. Yeah. Because it's hard, but like Draisaitl passes almost better on his backhand than most guys in the NHL do on their forehand, and these are the best of the best, and he's still that good on his backhand.
I don't even know how to describe it anymore, because he makes plays that are, even if you were to say, okay, try and complete this pass on your forehand, and you gave the time and space to a really good passer on his forehand and said, go ahead, create that pass, he does things on his backhand that most guys would have trouble getting done on their forehand. Like the cross-ice tape-to-tape stuff with the sauce on it as well to flip it over sticks, that kind of stuff is ridiculous. He'll make, like, board to board, right? One side of the ice all the way to the other side of the ice and hit a guy in full stride. It really is otherworldly, his ability to complete passes on the back end and his creativity. He is as far as hockey sense and vision goes, he is top percentile on the planet, and so is McDavid. So I don't know, man. We could do 4 hours a day on how good these guys are, and the team's doing well right now, so it makes the conversation easier. And we'll see. Like, it's all about consistency, right? So They're going to have dips here and there, but as a team, how do they do leading this team through its dips and powering them through? Well, I don't know how you felt about last night's game, but it felt multiple times last night like, oh, man, if Nashville gets the next goal, look out. And these guys, again, they just find ways. They just find ways in moments. And I think they're driven by something bigger, and it's very clear in the way they react to moments in games.
Jack Campbell, you know, I didn't like the first goal. I really had no issues after that. But the first goal, yeah. You know, the rebound control. So because of that, and like the Oilers penalty kill, we can get into that. That's the only thing that's really a major concern right now. But I would strongly go to Stuart Skinner tomorrow for a few reasons. One, Campbell started 7 out of 10. If you keep that pace up, that means he's starting 56. That's too many. So, you know, the next 10 games, it should be Skinner at least 4, regardless of play. But then when you consider how well Skinner's playing, I would play him tomorrow. I would play because it's New Jersey, and you know these are two of the top 5 teams right now in the NHL. And you know Campbell might not like it because Skinner's had Calgary and St. Louis, but I would go with Skinner tomorrow night. What would you do?
Oh yeah, 100% go Skinner for sure. Like Campbell was fine. You don't like the first one. Then rebound control continues to be something you're keeping an eye on with him, right? It hasn't been great. But no, go back to Skinner. You got a set of back-to-backs coming up here as well, so you can go Skinner tomorrow, and you can quite happily you can go back to Campbell if you feel like you want to on the Saturday, right? He played well enough last night to more than justify going back to him, and then you got the back-to-backs, and they're both good teams on this back-to-back. So there's lots of time for both of these guys, and I'm telling you, man, if they both get wins, and if they both continue to play well, never mind that 52-30 thing, we could see this being much more of an even split than we would have ever anticipated coming into the season. But that's going to be because Stuart Skinner forces his way into the conversation. In an ideal world, it's close to a 50-50 split, and they're both maintaining a reasonably high level. And Skinner keeps pushing and keeps pushing here. So, yeah, no, man, for sure get Skinner back in there, and then you've got 3 games in your next 1, 2, 3, 4 days, and, you know, you can kind of make your decision there. The interesting thing, too, though, is one of Skinner or Campbell is going to play 2 of those 3 in that 4-day period, and so who you start against the Stars will determine which one of those does.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shogger, I thought all the lines, like really, the Oilers for the longest time, like I thought for the first 40 minutes, they are literally toying with Nashville for long stretches of that game. And then, yeah, Nashville, you know, they got a little close in the third 5-3, but I never really thought that game was out of control. I really, you know, they got down early, but it didn't affect them, and boom, they scored. And then they scored again. You know, Derek Ryan scores on a nice play from Shore and Barry. Their 4 lines were going pretty effectively last night. Maybe the most effective 4-line role we've seen all year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought the Holloway line had some real good looks, and Woodcroft kept making a point of getting them back out there. And nice, you know, for them to be able to contribute. They were usable. The third line was usable. Puljujärvi had a really active night. He had lots going on, was physical, he was getting involved, so he was really active. Of course, we saw the offense coming from the other guys. Yeah, man, that was a really good 4-line game where everybody was usable through most of that game. Nobody really needed to be sat down at all. I think you can say the same thing largely about the blue line, too. Like, Niemelainen, you know, was physical, played a good game. I like the fact that they've been able to go 12-6 recently to give Niemelainen a chance to settle into his game. I really sensed they needed to do this to give him a chance. With 7, that's one of the disadvantages of going with 7 D-men, is your 6th and 7th guys have a hard time feeling comfortable and getting into any sort of rhythm. And by going 12-6, they've allowed Niemelainen to find his rhythm, and they're getting a better sense for what they've got in him, and there's some pretty good returns that they're seeing as a result of this. So, yeah, 4 lines that were usable, 3 D pairs for the most part usable outside of a tough rebound from a goalie and letting their foot off the pedal naturally a little bit here and there. Just another really solid way to win a game. A team that was trying to claw back, and they just kept their foot on their forehead and were like, nope. They just kept finding ways to stymie the comeback. So, good depth, man. Lots, you know, you make a good point in terms of areas of concern, the penalty kill for sure. But there's not a lot else right now with this team. 5-on-5, they're getting lots done. They're getting contributions, at least recently here, from some different parts of their lineup. A lot of good signs and arrows pointing up.
Yeah, the only one that isn't partying up is the penalty kill. Like, it's really showing zero signs of improvement. Like, they had one game where they killed off three, and everyone's like, oh, great! Like, you know, you kill off three power plays. But because Nashville went 2-for-2 last night, like 100%. So, and two goals quickly and fairly easily. Like, they were just like, hey, we're doing high tips. We know exactly what we want to do, and they didn't have an answer.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, you know, sometimes it's a lost draw, bearing down on a draw that would be a clear instead of a, you know, there's lots of stuff to look into, and I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but, you know, are they letting teams into the zone too easily? Are they letting entries and setups and those sorts of things? So they'll dig in, and it definitely is an area that needs to improve. By the way, the power play. I like the fact that this power play continues to evolve, and they've got a few new wrinkles this year, and I want to point this one out really quick. So remember last year how the power play was good, but how stagnant it was getting because we knew they were always trying to look to go across the ice to Draisaitl for the one time. They were always looking for that seam across the ice, and their power play got a little bit stale because of it. They figured out that wrinkle this year where rather than trying to go all the way across the ice, so picture like hash mark to hash mark, instead what they do is they go down low to the side of the net, out to the open slot, and the guy in the slot either has the choice of shooting or he then flips it across to the other hash mark. They've worked this wrinkle in. They did not do this last year. So rather than force it cross ice, they go low, middle of the ice, and then over to the side. And it's worked multiple times for them this year. But I just want to point that out as a way that this power play is continuing to evolve despite its success. New wrinkles, new plays, new ways of trying to create.
Well, they should have had another power play goal. Remember that McDonough might have the best save of the night when he robbed McDavid on that play, you know, that he set up off the side. And then McDavid had another one. He missed the net. Like, they,
I know. Yeah, like McDavid could have had three more last night, which is that's just ridiculous. The guy's shooting at 20. He scored two goals in that game last night, and his shooting percentage went down from 30 to 29 because he had eight shots on net.
Well, I know, Shager. You've been following his shooting percentage. I was like, geez, Shager's going to be excited because now he's under 30, but his goals went up by two.
Wow. And it's funny. I went on SportsCenter yesterday talking about how he's not really playing the game that much different because he's not shooting that much more, and he's not. And is he playing like a guy that's got 60 in his brain? No, I don't think so. He's just shooting really. And then he goes and has 11 attempts, 8 shots, and 2 goals. Last night he played like a guy who's got 60 on his brain.
Well, it doesn't even look unrealistic at this point. So it'd be fun to watch. Like I said, I'm not mentioning 50 and 50 till it gets to 30 games. Then the watch is on. So hopefully he's close by then. Shager, have yourself a good one. Quickly, Ryan Smith, Lee Fogelin, they will be inducted tomorrow. The first two members into the Oilers Hall of Fame, joining, of course, the guys whose jerseys are already retired. And, you know, two very different styles of players in different generations. You know, Ryan Smith was the fan favorite, you know, kind of the leading goal scorer on your team, whereas Lee Fogelin was just that steady guy. And, man, there's very few teammates who every player I meet that talks about him is just like they absolutely revere Lee Fogelin, the person.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. In and among all the greatest of the greats in Oiler lore, the way they talk about him, it's reserved for him. Like, he's definitely special to them. I don't have as much experience, of course, having watched him and stuff. I was a little bit younger, you know, then. Ryan Smith, tons of experience with watching him, covering him the whole bit. And yeah, I mean, we all know what he was all about, right? He was a heart and soul guy that left everything he had out there, and probably not the most skilled guy in the world, but got a tremendous amount done. We're sort of seeing a modern day Ryan Smith and watching Zach Hyman play every day. So just a huge congratulations. And I think it's really cool the Oilers are doing this. Gives fans a chance to celebrate it, creates a little bit of, you know, that unique feeling of history within the organization. And so I think it's great they're doing this, and congratulations to both guys.
Shager, we'll see you tomorrow. Have a good one.
See you, pal.